with Strong, A.N., 15th of December, 1965.
A covers, which concrete covers, which would last for centuries.
Yes, I see.
And then I had to beg people to accept a post office, or a pillar box at least. The villagers who wrote one letter a year, possibly.
Yes.
I didn't want them. You know, I just had to put them in. A sheer waste of money. That type of thing. The 94 experiment was roundly condemned.
Just for Rasmus Tandy's view, he said, well, in effect, he modified Clifford's view and said it was that cooperation outweighed risk.
Exactly what you are saying here.
Yes.
The Donemore Commission described it as an unqualified failure from the start. That seemed natural with the executive, still unanswerable to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
So the unofficial majority tended to become a permanent opposition, and the governor's reserve powers were literally a dead letter.
Mm-hmm.
Even Sir Hugh Clifford, the ablest governor by far, Gornwich, colonial office, couldn't make it work, and so represented. And so does he to the Donemore Commission. Stanley, intellectually ill-equipped to express any opinion on anything, was inevitably wrong. He alone stuck out against the opinions of those far better qualified to judge. He said the 24 Constitution was not an unqualified failure, but rather a qualified success. This is just trying to invent a slogan which was attached to his name as one of the finest.
This is a paper line, more or less.
Yes.
Was he trying to win the popularity of the politicians?
Well, it's in the Dispatch of Secretary of State. It wasn't published at the time.
No, I was wondering whether he was trying to mollify a politician. It's difficult when you seek for motivation.
I don't know really how much he affected them. I know he tried to mollify, you might say, the general populace. He degraded himself by being common. I mean, he would open a bazaar belonging to Don Pedro Guffo and the better, a new shop. He'd kind of turn out all his regalia in the new shop, but he would never ask a civil servant to dine.
Uh-huh.
He ignored his service. And like Caldecott, who chewed beetle in public to show that he was a demagogue.
Uh-huh.
And,
but was Tandy as like Caldecott a demagogue?
No.
Uh-huh.
He just a pander to the demagogue is a sort of leader of this.
Yes.
To be one of them, to identify himself with the lower classes class, to show he was
maybe he was to try and lean back the other way, maybe he was genuinely sympathetic.
He probably was, but he didn't this device was seen through by the people, the very first people to judge insincerity.
Uh-huh.
He didn't like going to petter shops any more than anybody else would.
Uh-huh.
And I don't suppose Caldecott enjoyed chewing beetles and jasmine.
Uh-huh. Yes, would you say that Caldecott was out of his political depth in Ceylon?
The trouble was with him, he was a sick man, he shouldn't have been there.
Uh-huh.
He was constantly ill, he suffered immense agonies from an arthritic hip or something. He was never a fit man. And he only stayed on after, for I think, was a mistaken sense of duty in the war.
Mm-hmm. Was he a sort of by Jove George, heartist type?
No,
mm-hmm.
no.
Mm-hmm.
He was very mulish. He wouldn't concede anything once he made up his mind.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I first came back to Colombo, just after the bombing, about three quarters of the harbour population had bolted.
Mm-hmm.
Practically every Indian had gone back to South India, and hundreds of Singhalese people had gone to visit sick aunts and, you know, naturally getting out of the bombed area. Perfectly right. Well, they didn't come back yet, and he spoke over the radio and said that anybody who didn't return to duty would be sacked. Well, how would a radio, 10 minutes on the radio, affect people in Anuradhapura, or where the Gaul, or anywhere else? Well, he didn't come back.
This was a bit impractical, wasn't it? Was he impractical?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So when I found this out, I wrote to him, I wrote to government, and asked that said it was quite impossible. This message should have reached them all. And, would he relax on it? No, he wouldn't move. Then I suggested, Well, when you relax to this extent, well, now you should notice in the press, in writing, on paper, put it in every newspaper, on every page of every paper for the next fortnight, and take every possible step, and go further than that and say, if you run away again, then you'll be sacked for good. I mean, you come back with your privilege. They're all sacked without their losing all their previous oaths, pensions, if there were any. If they come back now and they run away again, then they've had it. They won't get a second chance, a third chance. You wouldn't budge. So I went to Kotlara. I said, well, this is a position. I've done all I can. And he said, I quite agree with you. I don't see what more you can do. I can't do anything. But I'll promise you this, that when we get our self-government, the first thing we'll do will be to restore all these lost privileges ex post facto, retrospectively. So I had to be content with that. They trickle back. And, I must say I took no trouble to find out whether the man was a new man or not. I mean, they took him on and they just got me. I was not supposed to re-employ these people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see. Returning to the constitutional issue, I think that's all that can be said of the 1924 constitution. Did you feel that the government were leaning over backwards to please the politicians? They were not taking a firm stand on certain things.
Oh yes, well, Fletcher was at the back of that, of course. Uh-huh. Everybody took their turn from him. You catch my bag, I'll catch yours, you know.
Yeah, I see.
Iniquitous. What was a poor man like myself to do? Well, you'd never know. The government's unpredictable. I mean, I put up a thing. Somebody offered me ₹500,000 to build a cottage hospital, provided it was called after his name. He's a very rich, non-English-speaking Angshai. He'd made a lot of money out of rubber.
Uh-huh.
A delightful old man. I was at his daughter's wedding. We were great friends. And he came to me and asked me if I'd accept this. So I wrote a lovely letter of thanks. I'd put it up to government. And government turned Government turned it down on the advice of the Attorney General, who said that this gift ought to be rejected because it's obviously motivated by the
personal
desire for a modeliership or something like that.
Oh, I see.
So I wrote back and said, I've heard of, in my youth, I heard of some sort of story about... Thank you. Not looking a gift horse in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Someone?
That's enough, thanks. And I was rather sorry that the government hadn't given me authority to write on their behalf to thank him. Unfortunately, I'd taken that precaution some time ago. Now, what do you do with people like that?
Mm-hmm. What sort of... actually, I should come to that later. What have you got next on your list?
Personality.
Oh.
Chalmers.
Pardon?
My first governor, Chalmers.
Yes. Well... He came at a rather unfortunate time.
Yes. Manning. His 1924
mm-hmm.
constitution was messed about by the Secretary of State.
Yes.
He commanded a great deal of respect and was very able and strong. And lots of us thought that his 1924 constitution might have worked
mm-hmm.
If the Secretary of State hadn't tampered with his mm-hmm. recommendations. If we go back now to communal or territorial.
Mm-hmm. Yes, do you happen to know how this communal split was accentuated? Communal split among the educated citizens?
No, I don't
really know. Mm-hmm. For instance, I think, did you know Ramanathan?
Yes, of course. I met him in Mardi.
I have a feeling he tended to work against the Sinhalese pretty early on, but I don't know for what reasons.
Well, I don't suppose I'm thought about it. I was only interested in the effects on me, you see. I wasn't a constitutional lawyer or anything like that. I was interested in the metaphysical, the whole thing, more in direct effects on the working of the
constitution.
He wanted to improve it here, or the certain things happened that shouldn't happen. For instance, judging by things on the ground of politics and political interference, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had any part in the
administration.
Stubbs.
Oh yes, Stubbs.
Cold brain, but lacking in manners, could be vindictive, generally unpopular.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree that he was an intellectual snob?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He didn't make himself very popular when he first arrived, but I think the civil service was underbrained and overpaid.
You felt you were overpaid, were you?
Well, we didn't think so.
Oh. He said so.
He said.
Oh.
Underbrained and overpaid. Of course, he was a great example of the folly of appointing to a governorship or a colonial secretaryship a clerk from the colonial office.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened with Ghent in Malaya after this last war.
I see.
They had never been used to take responsibility or a quick decision. It was all on this side, on that side, on this side, on that side, putting a case up for the decision of the top man. They never had to say suddenly, here's a riot going on, here's the police being attacked. You ring up for instructions.
Bows makes this point very clearly.
Who?
Bows and arrows.
Oh, yeah.
But what surprised me about Bows was he's a resourceful man. But when it came to a point during the 1915 riots, and he was a senior man in Colombo, because no one was there, he refused to take responsibility.
Mm.
I know it was a big task, but it was an opportunity for him to do something.
Yes.
And
yes.
He was a senior member, you see.
Quite. Well, Caldicott was like that. When I came back from Rangoon, he asked me to stay with him for a couple of nights, and when I first arrived, I had an interview with him, and I said, I've been out of action, you see. I haven't even seen a newspaper for the month. What is the exact position between you and the Commander-in-Chief?
Uh-huh.
To whom am I responsible as Chairman of the Port Commission? He said, well, you have a sort of double responsibility. I'm still in charge of the civil government, and the Commander-in-Chief is only connected with defence.
Uh-huh.
I said, but surely there's very little that could happen in civil administration which hasn't some indirect bearing, at least, on defence. You might say that even the issue of petrol coupons is a defence matter, if the services of the claim, etc., etc. He said, well, just good old British way, nothing's written down. But I'm happy, very happy to accept it, as it relieves me of so much responsibility.
Whew. From a governor?
A governor.
Mm.
I said, all right. Of course, Leighton, the Commander-in-Chief, he was a gold mine. I mean, you could depend on him. He supported me through thick and thin. And I couldn't have gone on without him. I was constantly being torn between the Army and the Navy, the people who run, and I would be overruled. Somebody would attempt to overrule me on the ground of the war on. Oh, I used to get so sick of that, as if I didn't know the war.
What sort of man was Leighton?
First class. I mean, absolutely spontaneous. He didn't, his language, was, he didn't mind what he said. He was a typical bluff sailor, you might say. And,
What about his intellect? I mean...
Oh, he was a war. He got to the right end of the stick every time.
Uh-huh.
He was very spontaneous. You know, I mean, he'd suddenly ring me up and or say, I want this done. Very good, sir. Now then, I'd write a long letter explaining, all right, yes, your instruction will be carried out, but I'd like to put the following points. He'd bring back and say, I read your letter, I quite agree with you, cancel my instruction. But if you said no at the start, you'd had it. I mean, there's no good argument, but if you waited a bit and just put it
quite
back before him, he'd immediately see a fallacy,
mm-hmm.
If there was one.
Yes, reverting to Stubbs, would you say that he had the clerk's approach to problems?
Yes.
And looked at details, not at general questions?
Well,
it's a tendency.
I should say so, yes, in a way.
Uh-huh. I think Bose makes that roughly that point.
Yeah. Well, he knew more about him. When he was the chief secretary, I didn't know much about him from my junior position.
Well, he was always, he was governor a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson?
Sick man. Very nice, charming man. But not up to it. He died on the way home.
Uh-huh.
He was a sick man. Stanley, formerly Samuel, came down from Baylor with a fourth in the absence of a fifth class. A Jew who's got a series of private secretaryships under men like Goshen, etc., and finally got a job in the High Commission in South Africa, married a young, rich and beautiful South African wife. I had an interview with him some 3 months after he arrived. He told me it was his intention to see as much as possible of his civil servants. He never put this into practice. And to save most of his entertainment allowance, he discontinued entertaining, by which alone the governor can keep in touch with general trends by personal conversations.
Uh-huh.
And his entertaining went on pretty nubile young girls who were friends of his ADC. So they one senior officer who was absent from an official celebration which he was supposed to attend was asked to explain why he had been absent. He said it was so long since he was ever in government, Queen's House before, that he'd lost his way and couldn't find it. As it was true that he hadn't been invited in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not much to be said about it. No intelligence. He once asked me, dealing with the custom tariff, the name non-ferrous metals was raised.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me, I suppose that means non-portable. I got a good mark from that, from the chief secretary for worming my way out. I said, yes, some of these iron metals are rather heavy to carry or something. Yes, I had a big row with him. He was talking about the riots. He said,
ooh.
That Stanley.
Oh.
He's talking about the victims. And after a bit, I said, we're not thinking about the same thing. I said to him, victim, why? I thought you were talking about the women and children and Mohammedans have been massacred. No, the victims were the unfortunate people sent to jail.
That is what he was referring to.
Hmm? He was talking about Gyatilico, Senaico, some of these got put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
No excuse for that, it's great, but the victims meant something different.
Yes.
And then he blamed Darbygin
mm-hmm.
for the whole thing. I said, I can't sit and listen to this. Darbygin acted very well, considering the handicap,
mm-hmm.
trying to issue orders, definite orders, which he omitted to do because of the pressure of time and 20 people speaking at the same time and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And he then called the ADC and said, remove this man, take him away and bring me somebody better to talk to. Anyhow, Darbygin got a CMG shortly after that. So. Clifford, one of my most treasured recollections. Caldicott came from Malaya with a great reputation as an administrator. I only suppose he failed in Ceylon through ill health, in constant pain, and suffered physically great suffering. A very sick man, he's self-opinionated and stubborn. Well, twice he put me on the mat, badly, and twice I had to explain that he was wrong. I mean, the facts. He hadn't rung me up to say, look, I want to see you. What happened?
He had already made his decision?
Yeah, on some false information or misunderstanding it, and gave me a complete dressing down, told me I was incapable of holding my job. And when I got the breath to say anything at all, got the chance, I said, I'm sorry, sir, but you're mixing me up with something else. I did the entire opposite of what you're accusing me of doing. Well, from that moment he hated me. He didn't know what to say. He'd spread himself hysterically. Another time he told me that I'd done something which had the effect of raising the cost of living by 10%. Well, because nothing was more remote from the truth. And it took me about 3 pages to write a long explanation as to how he arrived at this mistake. Instead of asking me, do you agree that the effect of this order has been... I said, no, sir, of course not. Which I did eventually, but he wouldn't withdraw it. I mean, he didn't say sorry or anything. He made it clear that he hated me even more.
Uh-huh.
On the principle, one hates those one's hurt, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose. Mm. Rather pity.
Yeah. Oh, yes, this creation of what he called a pan-Singhalese government, that was a phrase he invented. He prided himself on that, as I know, but pan-Singhalese. You know. Well, because there were 7 Singhalese ministers under the Dunamore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know.
Well, how is that going to help the Tamil Singhalese business when the whole idea was multiracial, it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it alienated the minority group.
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Oh, there's room for one or two Tamils on the basis of population. There's room for a Mohammedan possibly, or a Berger or something.
There's one personality I hadn't mentioned there, Sir John Anderson.
Well,
he was a sick man, wasn't he?
He was indeed, and I think a little unbalanced from his physical, from the physical point of view. He was a sick man.
But what about his judgment on these 1915 riots? He dealt with specific cases. What did you think of that?
I thought he just about hit the nail on the head.
Oh.
He discovered it. Stubbs had lied.
Yes.
Look here.
Well, both have written the same thing, so it's on print.
Mm.
It's in print.
Now, look here, before we go any further, I don't want to be quoted.
Oh.
No. Yes, Stubbs, Newman must have told you this, I think. As he often mentioned to me, Stubbs had made written a report on what E.W. Pereira had taken home to the Secretary of State, said to have carried it in his shoes so mm-hmm. they wouldn't be pinched.
Is that true?
Sort of way of talking about it.
Yes.
And braving the submarines and all this sort of thing. E.W. Pereira is a very fine man, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I like him very much. He had... I forget who he was talking to, anyhow. He made a statement in a dispatch to the Secretary of State, and this was questioned by my friend, who it was, and he said, oh, well, not to worry. I told them there that a pack of lies. And, of course, they take anything from me, the Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
They believe everything I say, and, of course, they... Well, it's...
He told E.W.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And Sir John discovered this.
I'm sorry, I got two things mixed up. This statement of Stubbs that I can write anything I like because the Secretary will believe me, having been in the office there, and they'll discard anything I discard.
Yes.
So Anderson discovered a lie in Stubbs' report on the riots.
Mm-hmm. And after that, he never trusted him.
That's right, I think. Well, that's all on the Constitution until we come to Dunamore.
Yes, to Dunamore. That's the height of it.
Well, of course, that never worked either, really.
Pardon?
I don't think that ever worked properly, either.
No, I didn't.
This idea was taken from the London County Council,
mm-hmm.
What we call the legislature and executive session.
Who was the moving force in the commission?
Dunamore.
Dunamore?
Mm.
Not Shields or
no,
Butler?
No, I don't think so.
Rees, the Labour man.
Shields is
oh, yeah.
Labour.
Clark is marketing.
What do you think of the grant of universal franchise? You thought it was premature.
Universal franchise?
Yes.
Well, I think it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying this now.
Yeah, you made the point earlier. So
about the electoral colleges.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you feel that it made the government a bit more responsive to the needs of a wider group?
No, I don't think so in the least. I don't think the man in the street, the village, had the slightest say in the matter. He voted on promises.
Agreed, he voted on promises,
hmm.
But the government tried to woo the public.
I don't see how they could have done so. They wooed the politician. It never got down to the villager. I don't think the villager had any conception who the governor was.
Agreed,
or
but
the government.
Now the politicians were in power, or more or less in power.
Yeah.
And they tried to woo the masses by having the more social legislation.
Yes, by bribery, in fact, in some form or other, which every government does.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, too, of course. That's even more so. I mean, spending £50 million on taking away a small charge of a cup of bob on prescriptions. I mean, sure.
Reverting to another aspect, did you have any experience of the executive committees?
Yes, indeed.
You attended some?
That's where it broke down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
From the point of view of getting on with the job. Well, I was PCC most of the time, Trade
mm-hmm.
Customs and Excise
and the
harbour. Well, meetings took place once a month. Well, damn it, I want a decision every other day.
Yeah, I see.
On something, rather. I mean, within my powers, I didn't worry, but certain things I... Very often demanding money, of course, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, certain things that I had to apply for approval, as I would in the old days, to the Secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Secretariat would often ring up, if it were urgent, and say, is it all right if I do so-and-so? They'd say, well, I'll give you a ring back. I got to wait a month for an order.
But couldn't the minister sometimes take the decision on his own?
Theoretically, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it was not practical. It happened in a particular case where one of my people broke down. They'd forgotten to do something. That put me in a quandary. I had at stake literally millions of rupees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, say, if a collision between two major vessels happened, God knows what government would have had to pay. Compensation
mm-hmm.
for our neglect.
Yeah.
How it arose in another matter.
Yeah.
As soon as I found this out, I thought, well, I'll deal with whoever's responsible later. I must get the cable off at once. And I put it up to the council. Fortunately, they were sitting, the executive council, sitting in a couple of days' time, and they turned it down on the ground that it was in the middle of the... It must wait for the next budget. Another 7 months. Well, I was in the position not wanting to wait another 7 days.
Mm.
So I kept back after the meeting, went to the minister, Nakhon Marker,
mm-hmm.
a very decent chap,
mm-hmm.
a businessman, millionaire. And I said, look, this is very serious, sir. I must have this money. He said, I quite agree. What are we to do? Wait till next month? I said, yeah. Under section something other, so you have the right to... in a case of emergency like this, to approve, subject to confirmation at the next meeting. Oh, yes, he said, yeah. Well, supposing they don't confirm it. I said, well, then you're responsible, personally. But I said, it's only 2.25 lakhs. I'll go half with you if you're turned out. He said, all right, get on with it. I went back and telegraphed that morning. We were saved. They did pass it at the next meeting. But you see, I think he's probably the only man on that committee who could have afforded to pay a £250,000 apiece if he had been let down.
Yes, I see.
And not one of them would have taken responsibility. I don't think it was a matter of two.
What sort of man was he as a minister?
First class. He was a businessman. I put up a scheme for a second dry dock. It's going to cost £20 million. And he said, good. I said, I can promise you at least 12.5% return. Really, I should have said 25, but I was conservative. Why, of course, get on with it. Give me one sheet of paper explaining the whole thing. Leave it to me.
Did he control his committee?
He didn't try to. I mean, he did. He did some way.
Mm-hmm. Because
well, in this case, he controlled him this way. He didn't tell him what he was doing. He didn't tell government. He didn't tell anybody. He told me to put up his scheme on paper. I never heard more about it. I saw no reference to it in the budget meeting. And then I asked him what had happened. He said, oh, I got it through all right. Oh, he said, it's under the head of relief of unemployment. I put in 20,000 rupees for relief of unemployment in North Colombo. And they asked me, I said, I was going to dig a hole in the harbour in order to fill in the Bloemendal swamp. This is a 20 million job.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he wanted this 20,000 for. He was starting to dig, of course. Yeah, it took 2 or 3 years. And this was the immediate effect, would be to relieve unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if any European minister had taken it, it got sacked for that sort of deceit, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing that happened was the following year, he put in for 10 million. He said, oh, you passed it last year. What do you mean, passed it last year? I've never heard of it. He said, I told you we were going to dig a hole. We dug a hole. We didn't. I'm still digging. And it went through. And, of course, it paid for itself about 3 times over during war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could never have got that out of the old secretary.
Apart from the slowness of decisions, did ministries tend to work at cross purposes?
Well, really largely personal. The one man always opposed everything I did or said on the ground that I was inefficient, incompetent, and knew nothing about my job and depended on the false advice of the juniors.
This was the one man in the executive committee?
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking as between executive committees, they worked...
They worked in watertight compartments. Mm. Another thing which... there was no central coordination, no central body, no central committee. It was all 7 of them. Some of them impinging on each other, on others.
On the other hand, didn't you think that it gave these theoretical politicians some experience in administration?
Oh yes, it must have done. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a very good method.
What did you think of Sir Andrew Caldicott's his reforms dispatch? Mm. Have you read his Caldicott's reforms dispatch? I don't know if you heard. It's not in your time.
No.
Well,
it was in my time, but I never saw it.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect.
It was probably mentioned by Jeffries. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect of the Dalma Constitution was the relations between the ministers and these officers of state. Do you know what they were like at the start?
Hadn't the officers of state disappeared under the Dalma War?
No, 3 of them. Chief Secretary,
I'd forgotten.
Legal Secretary and Financial Secretary.
I only came in contact with them on the Public Service Commission.
Mm-hmm.
There was another failure. See, the Public Service Commission was supposed to be a completely impartial body, outside politics altogether. They were dealing with appointments,
mm-hmm,
and promotion and so on. In point of fact, the big mistake, the big mistake the Donald people made was to provide that any appointment, or at least describing a list of appointments, should be sent to the executive committee concerned for their comments.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, there was a lot of...
Terrible things. E.W. Blair, I remember saying time after time, why send the damn thing to us? I mean, if we disagree, they still do it.
Mm-hmm.
If we agree, well, why worry? Why take the trouble to waste time asking us for our, and then not accepting our thing? It's all silly. Give us a job of appointments or take it. I'm not asking for that we should have control of appointments. In fact, there should be an impartial body to appoint people, you see.
That was a very sensible view, but I have my doubts whether many of the politicians would have agreed with that, because they liked interfering.
Well, let them. But I much sooner have gone to my executive committee, so I knew a harbour engineer. I had to go to the Public Service Commission. Well, there were only 2 applicants. One was a qualified Englishman, and the other was an unqualified Singhalese.
unqualified in the sense that he hadn't got his degrees or his experience. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't take the responsibility of overruling my chief engineer by taking over a man who was admittedly without qualifications. Well, I say admittedly, who hadn't, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of underwater work concerned, you can't check that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either it's done properly or it's not. And, without going into it, it took me 26 weeks to get that post filled.
By whom?
Before the executive committee would withdraw their objection.
Oh,
well, the Public Service Commission would withdraw theirs. And I was actually approached by Tyrrell, the Chief Secretary, who said, will you please alter your recommendation? I said, certainly not.
He wanted to employ the Sydneys?
Yes, against his own wishes. Of course, he agreed with me entirely. I won't take responsibility of having a man who's not qualified. I'm not talking about colour.
Yes, I agree. I quite see your point.
As a matter of actual fact, in my time, about the same time, I appointed a junior to him, whom I particularly chose, a Sylhanese, as against any other outside African, because he was Sylhanese, and other things being equal.
Mm-hmm.
He had a qualification.
You see, the impression I get from reading some of Ivor Jenning's articles and other books is that there was a lot of friction in the early 1930s between these three officers of state.
Oh, there was, or in Parliament.
Yes, and the ministers.
These, what they used to call snoopers or watchers on, or they put in to guide us and see we don't make mistakes. It offended their sense of responsibility, and I quite see the point. Sort of attempt, it seemed to me, to continue the colonial system in that particular aspect. Taking the place of the old executive council, whom the governor was never supposed to give way to if he didn't agree. He wasn't bound by the executive council in any way.
Did you feel that high officers were rather in a nebulous position?
They were, yes.
These three men there, you're supposed to be the British government's men, and yet these ministers with power.
Yes. Oh, quite anomalous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't wonder they resented these people. And the one thing they didn't do was ever to stand up for us. Now, these three people would sit listening to gross abuse, and often undeserved, of public officers who couldn't answer themselves. I could never write to the newspapers, that sort of thing. And one of them might have stood up, no names, please. The service is surely acting under its general instruction and should not be abused. They can't answer back. They disgusted us too in that way.
I was wondering if there's anything in the personalities of the existing officers of state which furthered this friction. Was Tyrrell rather of the old school?
Tyrrell? Tyrrell was the most unpredictable man I ever came across. You never knew what he was thinking, and he drew the opposite to what he said he was doing or thought he was doing. I'll come back to him. He would say, I should say he was weak.
Weak?
Yeah. He sort of gave way when quite unnecessary. I mean, sacrifice a principle for the sake of harmony, and on the other hand, He'd go all out for something that wasn't even a principle.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't much matter if it was. He's more of that generation.
Mm-hmm.
I've got their names in the book upstairs, but I can't pick one out who is so... After all, I don't think many of them, more than a small handful, were qualified by seniority.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another point.
That's true.
Hmm. Well, there were only eight above me, and I was then only 2 years' service.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see your point.
None of them could be very old. Oh, indebtedness. It so happens it's next on my list.
Uh-huh. Yes, just before we come to that, I was wondering whether Tyrrell, for instance, was a type who would stand on his dignity.
Tyrrell?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Baudelaire?
But Dylan?
Mm-hmm.
He just bone idle.
Pardon?
He was bone lazy. He didn't do anything at all, except wait for his next leave.
Well, I know he disliked Ceylon.
Oh, yes? I didn't know that.
So Mr. Miles
I think he was anxious to get away and get promotion, get a governorship.
Yes, well, with indebtedness, is it?
Yes, the next thing I had on your list.
Yes.
Universal, right? Incurable. In general, I'm not inclined to put personal extravagance very high in the list of causes.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds rather like an essay. One writes differently from speaking.
That's one speaking, yes.
Other more likely causes seem to be economical or socially inevitable. Under the first head, you may have crop failures and the like.
Mm-hmm.
A man's forced to borrow to feed his family
mm-hmm.
when the grain can't last out till the next harvest. So he's got to borrow. Well, he borrows from his owner. At 50% interest,
mm-hmm.
50% per season, not per annum even. And he buys when at time of shortage, before the crops planted, at the top price. He sells when the harvest is reaped at the price is not in the market. He's cut both ways.
It cuts, but doesn't the man who lends him, when he's repaid, the man gets this money at the wrong time when the price is lower?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the terrible system of land tenure, which government never to face, and I'll tell you something about it. He had to pay for his ploughing, his bulls, his buffaloes, his seed, his cultivation, his guarding the field,
mm-hmm.
all out of his half share.
Yes, I see.
And then it was the landlord got the full share. So I suppose the tenant got about a third, the landlord half, and the rest went in the cost of running, you know what I mean? And then there's the second point, the complication of family ties
mm-hmm.
and accepted canons of expenditure, which mean if you don't, you're an outcast, if you don't,
mm-hmm.
Being left out of an invitation to a marriage, well, it just isn't done. A man can't afford to lose all his friends by not inviting everybody to the third generation.
Mm-hmm.
The family ramifications of cousin brothers and God knows what are far beyond what or perhaps then the root cause maybe the ties of family affection, which in itself is highly praiseworthy, but in its ill effects is impossible without a social revolution, which is equally practical and impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I once conducted this, I'm coming to a confidential inquiry among my clerical staff of some 200 decent,
yes.
hard-working, middle-class men. I found about 98% of them are in debt, some to a modest extent, but many so far gone as to be almost beyond redress. And I was living in a constant state of anxiety. Inevitably, they drifted to the moneylender, which often landed them in having to pay interest on interest for years.
Yes, I see. Do you think, in their case, as distinct from the villagers, status concepts had a lot to do with this?
Status
concepts, trying to maintain a certain status.
No, I didn't come across that. Mm-hmm. The man wanted to live, that's all. And when he had bad crops or something like that.
No, this is the clerical staff.
Oh, clerical staff.
Yes. Do you think in their case it was...
Sometimes, yes. An expensive wife or daughters and or something like that, living above his means. But then they're all doing it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
same as in this country. Lots of people in debt because they must have a washing machine,
mm-hmm.
which they can't afford. Because everybody else got them next door.
Yes, I see. Mm. What did you say about land tenure? Did you feel that government should do something there?
But impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it all originated from this monstrous system, which seems to me monstrous, of
Fragmentation.
Yeah. And law of inheritance, generally.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of Brain Scheme later on?
Well, I've forgotten what it was.
Indivisible leaseholds. Well, not quite. He didn't call it leaseholds, but they couldn't divide it. They could only pass it on to one person.
Oh, yes, that's fine. Oh, yes. many people thought of that long before Brain was born.
Yes, obviously.
But how are you going to alter that?
Well, that's the point. It was very good on paper.
Actually, a revolution.
But Mr. Nash said it was very difficult to work administratively.
Impossible. How could you check by it?
Well, they gave, in the terms of the grant, if you did such and such a thing, you lost it, you see.
Yes, but that only refers to future conveyances, surely. It can't alter the present system.
No. It meant that this bit of land was given to a person, and he could, when he dies, he could name an heir, one heir.
Yeah.
He couldn't pass it on to several people. He could just pass it on to one.
Right. Now, what about the present position of you and I? You own one 80th part of 80 acres.
That they didn't try to modify.
It can't be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got to have about four or five generations dying out before any impact is felt from the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, what? You're going to just introduce a law, say that as from tomorrow there shall be no inheritance, undivided inheritance?
No, they did try that. They didn't try. That's impossible.
Well, then how do they introduce this then?
Oh, this was only with regard to...